tuned in to the K-State Radio Network and Agriculture Today. On this segment, we have very interesting new information for the beef cattle sector on the drivers of beef demand. Of course, that is key to profitability in this industry and has been even more so in recent years. One of the individuals who's been involved in this research is with us now, K-State livestock economist Glenn Tonzer. He teamed up with colleague Ted Schroeder here at K-State and an agricultural economist now at Purdue University and a graduate of K-State, Jason Lusk, to look at the determinants of beef demand. And this, to point out, first of all, was a project sponsored by the Beef Checkoff. So producer investment in this, Glenn.
Yes, it was. So the Beef Board, which monitors how checkoff dollars are used, was behind this study. And some of our listeners that have been around for a while know that periodically the Beef Board encourages beef demand assessment studies. So this is not the first of its kind. It is different than some past ones, and we'll break that down a little bit in our session here today. But every once in a while, they ask the question, how strong is beef demand and what drives beef demand? And the core point of this project was to assess what are the drivers. So what is making beef demand come up? And when it falters, why is it going down? So we had a very intensive study assessing that.
And that is the difference between previous studies and this one, the intensity of it, the depth of it, right?
Yes, and how we went about it. So, you know, as a backdrop, for those that read the full report once it's posted online and it'll be freely available, is we actually have four different studies embedded in this study, and I'm not going to geek out and break all that down, but part of what we did was look at how price sensitivity, so how does behavior of buying beef change in response to prices? How has that changed over time? So there's no rule of thumb saying that consumers today are just as price sensitive as they were in the 80s, for example. So we have lots of economic models behind this. And one of the things we concluded was price sensitivity indeed is changing. Consumers are less sensitive to an increase in price than they used to be. Price still matters, but it doesn't matter, quote unquote, as much as it used to. Consumers also aren't as impacted by competing meat prices, so pork and chicken, as much as they used to, but they're impacted more by their consumer income levels. So when the general economic environment is good, like it is right now, so incomes are going up, wages are going up, and those kind of things, we've always known that's good for beef demand, but the marginal benefit of that for beef demand is actually growing. So there's a shift in the relative importance of consumer incomes relative to prices that's embedded in one of the analyses in this study.
Now, there are a number of findings within this, but that's one of the ones that really strikes one when they see it, this departure from price is an important factor. It's still important, but the weight it carries is considerably less.
Yes, and this is a bit outside the report, but I will take the liberty of kind of speculating like on why that would be, is I think as we've had a growth in dual income households, you know, growing pressure on meal prep time, ingredient time, those kind of things, we have less folks walking into the grocery store, studying the entire meat case, and being extra price sensitive to say, walk in, and if a competing meat price is much cheaper, they pick it up because it's much cheaper. There's still some of that goes on, don't get me wrong, but in aggregate, I think we have more behavior that's walking in those stores getting a specific item for a specific purpose to go into a specific meal, which, you know, mutes some of that price sensitivity. In addition, there's other issues besides price that matter, which is core to our study as well. So topics like safety, sustainability, climate impacts, lots and lots of discussions about non-price factors of how we produce food, and in this case, beef more narrowly, have risen, right? We have a lot of media attention, medical journal attention to those kind of things. And a second analysis in this study was basically quantifying back to 1980 how much of those different discussions have been going on, and then to figure out what impact they've had on beef demand. And there's a lot of details there again in the report, but a couple nuggets just to encourage people is some things have changed both in magnitude as well as sign or directional impact on beef demand. We've known Atkins diet discussions are good for beef demand for some time. Most of our listeners might remember 2004-05 was a really good period for beef demand, and that was the Atkins craze. Well, Atkins effects and discussions around that diet remain good and beneficial for beef demand, but they're not as influential as they used to be. So it's still positive, but it doesn't have the same oomph impact on beef demand as it used to. Another example that's intriguing is what's the impact of fat discussions? So the pros and cons of fat being in your diet as it relates to beef consumption. 10, 20 years ago, the tone in the medical journals and the general press was additional fat was bad for your diet. So more discussion was adverse for beef demand. Well, fast forward to more recently, we actually find it as a positive catalyst. So there's been some New York selling books on this topic. So the tone of the role of fat has changed. And I highlight that because even the same topic, in this case, fat, can change over time in terms of its directional impact on beef demand. And I think that's important to monitor because you can't just use old rules of thumb and go forward because the impact of those things do change.
Well, Glenn, what about beef production practices themselves and perceptions? That was also one of your objectives in looking at media coverage, to put it that way, of the beef cattle sector.
Yeah, so some of the related topics, you know, there's a lot of issues under the beef production umbrella, but we have issues like sustainability, animal welfare and well-being, those kind of aspects were tracked as well. And there are marginal benefits that are, you know, showing up on the beef demand front from that perspective, particularly sustainability. So as we have additional commentary in the media about sustainability, we're finding a positive impact on beef demand. It's hard for me to speculate on why that is. That's not really clear from this study, but rather just the directional conclusion is, as we have more discussions around sustainability, we find that is beneficial for beef demand.
And you did look at changing consumer demographics over time, too, you said.
Yeah, and the composition of U.S. households is changing over time. That's embedded in one of these assessments in the study as well. One of the things we note in our report is growth of the Hispanic as well as African American share of the U.S. population appears to be good for beef demand. That's worth noting going forward because both of those segments are expected to grow in the future. Other things that shook out that aren't surprising but rather just confirm kind of what we already suspected was higher income households, those that are fully employed and avoided, you know, recessionary impacts from the Great Recession back in 2009, tend to be more heavy steak demanders. So we already kind of knew that, but it's good that that shook out again in this report to confirm us of those kind of things. Gender differences, men tend to be a little bit more supportive of beef purchasing than females if there's a difference on that front of who's making the purchasing decisions. So the household composition effects, as you note, are outlined in that report as well.
Now, Glenn, to complement the findings on these beef demand determinants, you and your colleagues also forwarded several recommendations to the industry to bolster beef demand in the future.
Yeah, so there's several. And one of them is elevated importance on beef quality, even maybe at the, you know, expense, you like, of price. So there's going to be some things we can do to enhance taste, tenderness, freshness, those aspects. When I use the term beef quality, that's what I'm referring to. None of that's done for free. And I think there's signals from this report that if we can enhance beef quality in that context with some purposeful investments, even if it raises the beef price a little bit, that might be advantageous from beef demand. Where that comes from is we find things like taste and tenderness are very important in many, many studies, including ours. And yet at the same time, if price sensitivity is declining, add that up is where that comes from.
And one last thing, although you offered several other suggestions as to where this information might be a benefit to the beef sector, you advised that the beef cattle industry and beef production sector collaborate with competing meats, which is interesting.
Yes, and not everybody will agree with that recommendation, but where it's coming from is, remember I made the comment about the impact of competing meat prices is lower than it once was. That effectively means there's less substitution that's price sensitive than there once was. So that's one of the points behind that recommendation. The second part would be is there's a lot of issues embedded in this report and more generally throughout the entire meat protein complex that impact all species. So for example, discussions around the effect of climate, new issues about whether we should have plant-based meat production and so forth. There's a lot of common discussions that impact the beef, the pork, the chicken, and other livestock-oriented meat protein industries that are kind of common to them. And none of them are free to combat and study and support research on and so forth. So if you couple the fact that there's less cross competition and price sensitivity with a growing list of issues that impact the entire livestock space, that begs for more collaboration than maybe we've had in the past.
So all of that said, Glenn, how do you and your team hope this information will be used by the industry?
I hope point number one, and I sound like a broken record, is just recognize the importance of beef demand. So we outline that in the report and just remind everybody of that. Second would be is the answers to what is impacting beef demand change over time, and they're different for steak versus ground beef, and they're different for certain household types than other household types, and those kind of wrinkles in the story are getting more and more important. So homogeneous, you know, across the board black and white kind of statements, they mask a lot of the deeper part of the story about who's buying beef and who pays more for it. And hopefully studies like this help us kind of understand those nuggets. But I hope people take from the examples that are in this report the value of that understanding and how you act upon it. So this is beef checkoff oriented. There's a lot of investments that the checkoff does into promotion, into innovation on new products and so forth. Hopefully some of the specific findings from this will be used in making those checkoff allocation decisions.
Is there some place that one can go to review the entire document?
So it will eventually be on the Beef Board's webpage. The exact URL I'm not quite sure of, but we will cross-post to agmanager.info here at K-State, and anybody else is welcome to contact me, and I'll get them a copy.
Well, great work, and it is insightful information on what's driving beef demand, so utterly important to our producers out there, obviously, and we appreciate the time, Glenn. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric.
That's Glenn Tonser, livestock economist, K-State Research and Extension. Once again, he and K-State livestock economist Ted Schroeder, as well as their peer at Purdue University, Jason Lusk, worked on this Beef Checkoff-funded and in-depth study assessing beef demand determinants. Again, it's posted on agmanager.info for your review, should be so inclined. Producers, it's a good read. And this is Agriculture Today. We'll stand aside for a few minutes now. When we return, today's agricultural news headlines coming your way, along with this week's edition of Tree Tales, and again, this week's 4-H segment for you, all still ahead here on the K-State Radio Network.